Natalie is frozen.
No, what happened there? Crashed.
Oh, hello.
How
am
I going to do this?
My internet is
down. Oh.
Here we go.
This is funny.
It's reaching out.
This is so funny.
It's all right.
All right. This is the joys of Wi-Fi. Hi, I'm Dr. George Talapouris, and welcome to Reasonable and Necessary, Australia's premier podcast series on the National Disability Insurance Scheme, brought to you by the Summer Foundation. I'm coming to you from Wurundjeri land, and I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. But before we go any further, please hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and select the notification bell so you can be notified of future episodes. In this episode, I'm meeting with the NDIS Provider and Registration Task Force. We're going to talk about social control, mandatory registration, and how you can have your say. Check it out. Hi everyone, welcome to the show.
Hi George.
Hi George.
Thanks so much for joining us. How about we start by introducing ourselves, and I'd love to hear from each of you about how you end up on the task force and a bit about your background. So I'll start with you, Natalie.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us, George. This is such a great privilege to be here again. I'm returning to your podcast. So my name's Natalie, and for those who don't know me, I am a human rights and disability rights lawyer by trade. I usually spend my days running a law firm that represents people with disabilities and their families, but I, at the moment, am chairing the NDIS Provider and Worker Registration Task Force. So when I was invited to be the chair of the task force, I saw it as a really exciting opportunity to be part of the reform that makes for a better and safer NDIS. And I'm really looking forward to being part of the conversation with the community over the next little while.
Thanks, Natalie. Vicky.
Yeah, hi, George, and thanks for having us along today. My name's Vicky O'Halloran, and I reside in Darwin in the Northern Territory, and I've worked in the disability sector for nearly the whole of my career and until 2017, when I took on the role as the administrator of the Northern Territory until 2023, so a little bit over 5 years in that role. When I was asked to be a part of this task force, I thought that it would be great for Territorians to have a Territorian as a part of the task force, so they had a louder voice. Often it is that those of us living further away from the city centres, our views are not captured as much. And I was particularly thinking about people who live in the regional, remote and very remote parts of the Northern Territory and how I may be able to assist with some of their challenges and concerns getting to the table and being talked about, and for us to have some robust conversations about life within the National Disability Insurance Scheme for them.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael.
George, like Natalie and Vicky, I'm really pleased to be here and speaking with the listeners, which there are many of your podcasts. I get around, I hear lots about your podcast, and I know it's very well regarded. I was really pleased to accept an invitation to be a task force member. It's a unique opportunity to improve to contribute to an improved regulatory framework for the sector. I have a background in health and safety regulation, and I've worked across many regulatory frameworks, and I've interacted with many regulators over the years. I've really enjoyed the experience so far working with Natalie and Vicky, who are great companions on the task force. We've heard from many people who are freely giving of their ideas and their experience, and it's been a wonderful experience today, and I'm really enjoying it. And I hope I can make a contribution to the advice to government.
Welcome, all of you. Why don't we start with the most obvious question on everyone's mind? Why do we need this task force? Natalie?
Thanks so much, George. It's a really good question. I think that often when there is a process like a task force put in place, there can be really good questions just like that. Why do it? Well, the NDIS review, as you all know, recommended that there be this proposed model of graduated risk proportionate regulation and registration, bringing in registration and enrolment into the provision of disability support services. But the review made very clear that recommendation needed to be subject to further consultation and co-design with the disability community. And we, the task force, are the first step in delivering on that part of the review. Whilst the government has not made their position known on the recommendation that is subject to our inquiry, it is therefore open to us to really get into the detail of the proposed model and work with community and sector alike to provide this advice so that the minister can have a clear idea before he makes a decision on the recommendation.
Natalie, you referred to a term, and it's in the terms of reference, of a graduated and risk proportionate framework. Lots of fancy words there. What does it all mean? Like, what for people who are just thinking there's a lot of jargon words and technical terms, what does that mean for people on the ground who are receiving and who are delivering NDIS supports?
Well, fancy words for a fancy lady, George, that is one thing for sure, but it means, in the briefest way possible, that one size does not fit all. It means that there will be a scale that is applied, so different approaches applied to different types of services and supports that considers the risk that might be involved in those supports and services. So I think that when we talk about, as you say, George, there's really policy-driven words like graduated and risk proportionate, though a lot of your listeners would be experts in those words, I think that we could all agree that it ensures that the way in which disability services are regulated, in this instance, registered and enrolled, are not subject to a one-size-fits-all model.
Let's talk about that then in a bit more detail, because there are a lot of people in the community, including myself, who are quite concerned and worried that where we advocated for an NDIS that's based around choice and control, and we've got this fantastic thing called self-management where we can choose our supports on the open market. What would you say to people like me and other people who are worried that this will mean that we're going to have a lot less choice around who supports us and how we're supported?
I would just like to say to you, when I look at the terms of reference and look at the report that will be informed by everybody we're having discussions with over the that we've had discussions with already and that we'll have discussions with over the next few months, that the terms of reference is really strict about increasing quality and innovation, but it also refers to the fact that we must enable people who are self-managing in the NDIS and employing their own workers to continue to do so. And, you know, that's not lost on us in any of the conversations we're having. And it must, you know, uphold the rights of people with disabilities around choice and control. And then at the same time, you know, bring into that equation the reduction of potential harm to people. So I hear where you're coming from, but, you know, that is a focus that we have every day, that, you know, you must be able to continue to do what you're doing, but within a risk proportionate framework that is addressing some of the violence and abuse and neglect that is occurring in the industry at the same time.
Lucy, that's very good to see that, and I was very pleased to see outlined in the terms of reference the commitment around exercising social control. I'm really interested in hearing about what you've heard so far, because you've been operating for, a bit over a month now. What are you hearing from the ground?
Well, I think we're hearing a whole number of things. We're hearing from people with real experience, which is invaluable to us, George, in our deliberations. We acknowledge the stress and anxiety that's going on. We have heard lots of things about innovation, and we recognise the great innovation that how people are managing out there. We also recognise that some people are left behind, which is disturbing, and we're taking that into our deliberations as well. We've heard time and time again that the system's not working as well as it could, and that's important for us to hear as we tackle our advice to government. But we've got a long way to go in the consultation process. I don't want to make specific reference to individual submissions that we've heard, but let's put it this way, that people have been very generous with their time, going to a great deal of trouble to reach out to us, to write detailed submissions, to speak to us in a manner that suits them. People have lent their expertise and knowledge, and that's all really grateful. And we really want to change the regulatory system in a way that improves, has an impact on people's lives. Not regulation for the sake of it, but that things that have an impact improves people's lives. And we've already talked about choice and autonomy and control.
That's really important, those things. And we do want to also continue to see the innovation. Often if we impose too much regulation, we can make it harder for people to innovate and do things that might result in better outcomes. What are your thoughts on that, Natalie?
I think, George, broader Australia would be really surprised at the amount of innovation that people with disabilities and their families have come through with to ensure that they have the supports and services that support their life outcomes. And I hope that the task force work will honour and recognise that innovation that has been achieved. It highlights to us not only the valued role that innovation has played to date in the lives of people with disability, but also the critical role that it will play going forward. At the forefront of our mind is to ensure that the marketplace, which is of course governed by regulation, is such that allows for innovation, both of people as individuals, but also organisations, entrepreneurs, to come into the marketplace and pursue the life outcomes and the human rights of people with disability. So we're very mindful of that. At the moment, George, we're hearing some really incredible stories of where innovation has supported people with disability to progressively realise their human rights. And we've been asking the question of what drove that innovation? Why did you come up with that innovative model? And what support, if any, did you have within the market to make that innovation a reality? So as you know, George, we are required to look at services for one, direct employment arrangements, and they are examples of really impressive innovation that people with disabilities have come through with to ensure that they have good supports at home in the community. And so we are hoping that we will be able to advise the minister on the ways in which the marketplace can support not only innovation, but also diversity within the marketplace.
Can you tell us a bit about how you're developing your advice? And we had a commitment and a promise from the government, and you've also said in the NDIS review that that whatever happens next needs to be co-designed.
We have designed, talking about designed, a very elaborate engagement structure. And that's so that we can hear from absolutely everybody that's interested in having a say. And as I referred to earlier, there's numerous ways you can do it. There's just not one pathway to providing us with your ideas. So just let me run through this elaborate engagement structure. There is 5 working groups, which are meeting fortnightly. And George, you're a member of one of those working groups. And we're really pleased that you've agreed to participate, and we've valued your input. We have a participant and nominee working group, advisory working group. We have a provider and regulators group. We have a disability care workers and organisations advisory working group. We have an academic and policy working group, and we have an intergovernmental working group. And there, we're captured in the composition of those working groups, people who've got great expertise and many years involvement in the disability community and the disability sector. We're meeting one-on-one with a whole range of peak groups, both national and state and territory. We are having a whole series of round tables, so many in fact, that all 3 of us can't meet absolutely every single one of them because the time doesn't allow. And the other thing we're doing is we're reaching out to people, and we're going out to people, including people in regional, remote and very remote locations. Anyone who's asked for a consultation is being facilitated, and we haven't knocked anyone back. We're meeting with interest groups like unions and others, anyone that wants to have a say. The reason the government has established this task force, potentially they could have decided the matter themselves, but the reason they've established a task force is so that we'll go out and talk to people and to listen, and that's what we're doing. We are listening. And I ask people to refer to the DSS website where all the information about consultation engagement strategy is located, and if people haven't made arrangements to have their say, they're more than encouraged to do so. In terms of co-design, we're doing as much as we can in the time available to us. It's a very short time frame. Terms of reference are quite strict about when we need to provide advice back to the government and to the minister. But we as task force members are really appreciative to those people that have reached out to us, that have made time in their busy schedule, whether as members of organisations, boards, councils, etc., or as individual carers and participants. People are giving up their valuable time. They want to be heard, and we certainly want to hear from them.
Yeah, that's really important. And as someone who's involved on the one of the advisory groups, I've been very impressed by the depth of the conversation that we're able to have, and to Natalie's chairing,
she's really good. She's our secret weapon. Natalie is doing a great job, and we're really lucky to have her.
Look, I've been speaking to a lot of people about the issue of self-management, registration, and social control. And one thing that comes up a lot is that people want to access services in the mainstream. So they want to use a local gardener for helping them with the yard maintenance. They want to be able to have services and support from people in their local community who don't necessarily see themselves as part of the NDIS. Will that still be possible?
Yes, look, I think, George, we've been thinking about language over the course of the last month or so, and I think when we were talking about providers, I was very involved in the Every Australian Counts campaign in the Northern Territory, and when we were referring to providers at that stage, it was about people who were providing support services directly or care services to people with disabilities. And that's evolved with the introduction of the scheme, I think, to all sorts of suppliers, you could say. And you've mentioned the retail sector there. So I think our report needs to pick up on that, and any advice that we're receiving from people who have those concerns. One, we're acknowledging that concern exists for a lot of people out there at the moment. And two, I think we need to start looking at the language we're using. So are they providers? What does the provider look like? And or are they a supplier of goods and services?
That's really interesting. Natalie, any thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, I think that it's important to build upon what Vicky has said and highlight that the NDIS review, as listeners would be aware, has recommended that all providers be registered or enrolled. And currently, under the law, the NDIS Act, a provider, as Vicky said, is defined to be anyone that receives NDIS payments that is not a participant. So as Vicky has highlighted, it has seen this growth of the entire gamut of what people with disability may spend their funding on be included in the definition of provider. And so the task force is looking very closely at the NDIS review recommendation and wanting to build upon that as they recommended that we do, and really speak to people and consult on how this model would impact. And I think that the point you raised, George, is a really critical impact area.
There are people in regional and remote areas where they're literally are no registered providers. What do you have to say to that group of people who are concerned that they won't have any options if the advice is to require all providers to be registered?
Thank you, George. We look forward to, we've had some engagement with people living remotely already, and that will continue. So we'll be listening to their concerns and taking those on board with our advice. And I think we're off to the Northern Territory, to Alice Springs, in a couple of weeks, and we'll be talking to people from a very remote areas that will link with us and tell us about their story. We respect that there are thin markets, and we're not going to be in the business of wanting to do any damage to those. And so the conversation will be about what does strengthening regulation mean for you, and how can your voice be in, a part of the report and our advice to government.
So do you see any restrictions in what people can purchase as a result of the work of the task force? Will there be a narrowing in the things that we can use our NDIS funding for?
George, we don't have a view at the moment as to what our advice will be, but we certainly encourage people to let us know how the proposed model will impact them so that we can advise Minister Shorten on what those impacts are. So we don't have a view at the moment, but we are relying upon people telling us and being a part of this conversation that we are creating.
I think too, George, we want to hear, you know, why are people using unregistered providers? How are they using them? When are they using them? All of that information will assist us greatly, because a lot of people who are using unregistered providers are telling us they're using them very successfully. Some are telling us they're not happy with unregistered providers. And it's the same with registered providers. Some people are using registered providers and are, you know, very satisfied with those, and others are not. So, you know, there isn't a consistent theme, but certainly we are not setting out to restrict people's choice and control, and that is clear within our terms of reference.
That's really good news, and good to hear. Thank you. Do you have any thoughts on the reasons why there is such a large number of unregistered providers in the market.
So, George, as you would be aware, there is actually very, very little research into why people use unregistered providers and what they use them for. Helen Dickinson has produced some of the only research that the task force is aware of into this issue. Though at a systemic level, it's important to understand that the language of registered and unregistered should be used very carefully, because at the moment, registration is not mandatory unless you're providing specific services. And so there are there's this one size fits all model to registration, which presents predictable economic barriers to why it would not suit a large number of providers. And so whilst we talk about registered and unregistered, the reasons behind them, we are very keen to hear, and we're very grateful to Helen Dickinson for her research in that space. But I think it is very important to highlight that registration does not mean an absence of regulation. That is, that unregistered providers operating in the NDIS marketplace, or put more clearly, are providing everyday disability supports and services, are not unregulated. They are still required to comply with certain regulatory features like the NDIS Code of Conduct. And so I think it's interesting that people use unregistered providers, and we're very excited to hear why that is. But ultimately, I think that we need to be very careful in the way we use that language.
Absolutely. And I'm very keen to remind people what you just said, that unregistered doesn't mean unregulated. And the Code of Conduct, as you it applies to all providers. Michael, would you like to add to that?
Well, look, thanks, George. Over the time that the task force has been in operation, we've heard different reasons, and people are obviously stooped in the history of the scheme. Some people say that the shift to unregistered providers it was never intended. Some people say that it could have been reasonably foreseen. Other people said it couldn't be foreseen at the time. But I think quite correctly, you've identified the shift, the change, the explosion in the number of unregistered providers. So the government's just established the task force to come up with something that is contemporary and is fit for purpose. Taking into those things, taking into consideration those priorities that they've enunciated around autonomy and control and choice that are articulated in the terms of reference. But this is something to come up with, a regulatory model that's contemporary and has the best interests of the disability community front and centre.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Mary, look at how people buy things these days. We do tend to use the old Google search, and we type in what we want, and then we look for the cheapest price, and then we find one that's suited to us. And that's how a lot of people do spend some of their NDIA funding. Do you think that will still be possible under a future framework? Do you think that people will still be able to find value for money under a framework that requires all providers to be registered and involved?
This is not about an exercise in increasing costs for people. It's about making sure that the funds available to them go for their care, and it's not about restricting options. But we are talking to retailers as part of our engagement strategy, so that's something that we're conscious of as we deliberate.
Thanks. I think it's important that we continue to have those options. Before I go, I just wanted you to say an overview of how people can have their say.
Well, George, part of the reason we graciously and accepted an invitation to appear on your podcast is we want everyone to know about the task force and the important work that we're doing. So thank you very much for helping to spread the word about the work that we're undertaking. But as I said earlier, rather than me sort of spell it out chapter and verse now, I just refer people to the DSS website. And if they look there, they'll see a link to the task force, the provider and worker registration task force. And all the information there is set out in hopefully what is easy to read terms.
Excellent. I'll put that link in the description below. Any final thoughts? How about I start with you, Vicky?
Thank you, George. Look, my final thoughts are that this task force is about providing advice to the minister, a report that's due to the minister, and that report will be wholly informed by the discussions that we're having with people, the opportunities for engagement, the submissions, the workshops that we'll have, the attendance at conferences, all of the conversations that we are having with people will inform that report. And I would like to think that, you know, we're only, nearly 2 months in now, but we've had a lot of conversations and we have such a full schedule over the next few months to try and reach out to as many Australians as we can far and wide to hear about the different scenarios of how people are being impacted, how they're being impacted positively, and what their challenges are, and what they think about strengthening regulation and how that would make a positive change to their life. And if they're concerned that it won't, why not? We need to hear that. The other thing I would say finally, George, is that there's been a Royal Commission, we know that, and there's been the NDIS review, and we respect very much that people have had a lot of questions asked of them, and there's an element of fatigue. And I would like to think that now we're coming to the table and having discussions about solutions and the way forward.
Thanks, Vicky. Michael.
Final word from me, George, is to say that every contribution is valued. So we ask people to let us know what they're thinking, to share their experience with us, and that way we can be across all the issues when we present our advice or formulate our advice for presentation. So people shouldn't be reticent or hold back. It doesn't have to be a long contribution necessarily. It doesn't even have to be written if people don't want to. But please let us know your short thoughts, share your thoughts with us, and that way we're fully informed when we develop our advice for the government.
Thanks, Michael. I think that's important. Last word for our chair, Natalie.
Thanks again so much for inviting us to speak to your audience. I know that they are incredibly valued members of the disability community, and we are pleased to be able to speak with them today. George, I think it is fundamental that we always remember why the NDIS exists and the important role it plays in ensuring the realisation of rights of people with disability in this nation. It is a central part of the way that people with disability will get ahead and ensure that they achieve the life outcomes that they want and deserve, but also, most critically, have their human rights advanced and upheld within the nation. So while the task force is but a small part in that story of disability rights in Australia. I am very, very honoured to be leading this conversation and ensuring that people with disability have choice and control in their supports and services, and they are able to access a fair and equal opportunity as all other Australians.
Thanks, Natalie. On that note, I just want to say a big thank you to the whole task force, all three of you, for joining me. And I hope that you'll come back when you've had all of the co-designing all sorted out, and we can tell people what you came up with in terms of advice. And that'll be a very interesting conversation. How does that sound, Matt? You want to come back?
Yes, I'm sure we'll be back in time, George.
Great. Thanks, Natalie. Have a lovely evening.
You too, George. See you later.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Reasonable and Necessary. As you know, we love your feedback, so please share your thoughts and comments in the section below. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay well and reasonable.